Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Thank you to Quince and Lola Blankets for sponsoring this episode.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Shelley Hamilton is a co-victim of murder and co-author of the nonfiction book The Forsaken. She has spent years uncovering the truth behind a deeply personal and complex case that forever changed her family and community, the 1978 murders of Shelley's 24-year-old sister Rhonda Hamilton Wick and Rhonda's 4-year-old son Donnie. Shelley's journey in the criminal justice system over the last 48 years has been truly shocking. From mistrial to conviction to a prisoner's pardon, she has never given up her fight for truth. Alongside journalist Alicia Doyle, Shelley's mission in co-authoring The Forsaken is to document the facts and share the emotional truth that drives this story. The Broken Cycle Media team is incredibly grateful for both women's time, energy, and advocacy. The following episodes are dedicated in loving memory of Rhonda and Donnie Wick.
My name is Shelley Hamilton. I actually had to ask my daughters to give me some input because I don't know how to describe myself except stubborn. My daughter said, "No, you're just strong-willed." My daughters gave me some adjectives to use: sweet, kind, supportive, creative, selfless, devoted, determined, protective. I was born in Southern California, lived in Pasadena for a short time in my life. I had an older brother who was 5 years older than me. My sister Rhonda was 3 years older than me, and a little brother, Rick, who was 4 years younger than me. We all grew up together. My parents had moved to California from Ohio in 1956, so all my cousins and aunts and uncles were back east. My family moved to Simi Valley, California in 1963. I was about 6 years old when we moved there. Simi Valley was really nothing but farmland. Everything was spread pretty far apart. Where we lived, but the far west end of the valley, was fairly new area, and it was what they call tract homes. So we were pretty secluded. We had a bowling alley across the street. In our little tract, we had a park and we had a school. So it was a really sheltered little life that we had. It was a very quiet, peaceful little place, very small, and we just walked everywhere. I had a great childhood. I had a wonderful family. We were all very close. My sister and I shared a room. For the most part, we did get along, but we were girls and we did get on each other's nerves. But we were each other's playmate. And despite the age difference, we did a lot of stuff together. She was the one I would talk to about everything because she was older than me. Rhonda was beautiful. She was taller than me. She had gorgeous curly hair. She was one of the most caring people I had ever known. She was very nurturing. She was very motherly. I didn't want her to mother me, but when talking to my little brother years later, he loved being mothered by her. She was very creative. She loved crafts. Anything that was hurt or wounded or needed caring, it was an animal and it was sick, she wanted to bring it home and nurse it back to health. And my parents were okay with us bringing home stray animals as long as we didn't bring a dog because we had a family dog. So every cat we found, we brought it home. If it was a snake or a lizard, whatever it was, we brought it home. And they stayed in our bedroom. And looking back, I can't believe my mother let us keep a toad in our bedroom, but she did. Even in how she chose her friends. Rhonda wanted people who just needed to have a friend, and that's kind of what she was attracted to. I always look forward to getting her hand-me-downs because I loved her clothes. I loved her shoes. I wanted everything she had. She taught me about makeup and answered questions that I didn't want to ask my mother. Rhonda left home and got married in 1972. I was about 15 years old. I have to say I was really happy she was going because now I had the room all to myself. She moved to Austin, Texas, and we really didn't remain close. We wrote letters, but that was really it. Back then, you couldn't just pick up a phone and call somebody because it costs money to talk long distance. So we didn't have that luxury back at that time. Then she had Donnie in 1974, and I was in high school. I was so excited to be an aunt, and I was not a baby person. My mother always worried about what kind of mother I was going to make because I did not want to hold other people's babies. I didn't want anything to do with them. Toddlers were fun, but babies, no. But Donnie, I couldn't wait to hold him and play with him and talk to him. In fact, there was a guy at school that had a huge family and a bunch of nieces and nephews already. And so he started calling me Aunt Shelley because I was so happy to be an aunt. My mother did go out for the birth. We went out there for Christmas. So we did get to see him, and I got to spend a lot of time with him, and I just fell in love with him. And she loved being a mom. This was her calling in life. Her marriage dissolved around 1976. Her and Donnie moved back to see me to be with mom and dad. By then, my older brother was out of the house and married, living in Washington State. My little brother was still in high school, so he was the only one home. And of course, I was already gone too. I was in the Army. I was very adventurous, and I wanted to go to Europe. And that's why I did it. And I got to go to Europe. In that period of time is when she started seeing Ray Jones. And I knew about him. I was home on leave in September of 1976. They picked me up from the airport. This is when I very first met him. I wasn't overly impressed with him. He was a nice guy, but I didn't see him as a strong enough person for her. I thought she needed a stronger personality, somebody that would take care of her and protect her. And he didn't seem that to me. It was her first boyfriend after her divorce. I guess I got to know him pretty well, and he was nice enough. But again, as I got to know him, I still didn't see him as being a very strong force in her life. I know she really wanted independence. She didn't really want to get married. She liked being in the relationship, but she really wanted just to be independent because by this time she was about 23 years old. She wanted to be with her little boy, and that was really her whole world at the time. She loved being with my parents. She loved being home. In April of 1977, I was released from the Army. I only served about a year. I got out for medical reasons, so I didn't get to serve the whole time. I was 20 when I returned, got married probably about 4 or 5 months after I returned, and I had met him in the Army. We moved to LA because that's where he was from, and that's where he could find work. And I didn't mind. It was an adventure to me. Although my heart was always in CME, leaving CME was very hard and coming home. I can't even describe how good it felt to come over the hill and see our little valley. We had a little girl. By then, my sister was already living with my parents. She was planning on getting her own place in Simi Valley. We lived in different places. I lived in LA, my older brother in Washington State. The rest of the family all lived in Simi Valley. We were all very close. We didn't get to see my older brother that often since he was so far away. But for the most part, I visited quite often and spent holidays all together. So we were always there for something, birthdays. So we were always back and forth from LA. I kept in very close touch, and my sister was very happy to have a niece. We're always doing things together, and it was really nice now that we were both adults, both moms. And so we had a lot more in common, and it was a different relationship. I wish we would have had more time together, but this started around the spring of 1977, and they died about a year and a half later. So I didn't really have quality time that I would have wanted, but we were definitely getting there.
Thank you to Quince for sponsoring this episode. Summer in LA is officially brewing, and the heat always has me coming back to Quince. That's because Quince uses lighter fabrics and better materials for pieces that just feel good the moment you put them on, and they look effortless. Quince focuses on high-quality essentials, think breathable linen, soft organic cotton, washable silk, without the luxury markup. It's that rare balance where everything feels elevated, but still easy and accessible. Quince has beautiful everyday pieces like 100% European linen pants, dresses, and tops with styles starting at $32. And everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. That's because Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middleman, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has really become a destination for elevated essentials across home, kitchen, bedding, and beyond, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. And even though everything on Quince's site is amazing, my personal favorites are the new gauze-smocked square-neck midi dress in red and the stretchy cotton tee. And I definitely cannot forget the perfect silk spaghetti strap dress that hugs my curves just right. And now you can elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/WCN for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/WCN for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/WCN.
My sister was going to the local junior college. She decided to take a self-defense class. The reason she took this class is because back in 1957, the year I was born, our grandmother, my mother's mother, was murdered in Dayton, Ohio. My grandmother was strangled and raped either as she was dying or after she was dead. My mother was 21 when this happened to her mother. Back then, you didn't have social media. You didn't have access to newspapers from all over the world. But my mother loved to read True Detective magazine, and she always had them in the house. She let us read the story. So this was how we knew. I guess she waited until she figured we were old enough to know. But I never knew for the longest time. I assumed grandma was old. Well, she wasn't old at all. She was in her 50s. This story has such a profound effect on Rhonda. She did not want to die the way that our grandmother died. So she took these self-defense classes. Her maneuvers she practiced on Ray, and he knew how she was afraid to die that way. Fast forward to September of 1978. Her and Ray had been together for about 2 years, and they were pretty steady. At this time, we had a family gathering at my parents in Simi because my brother and his wife and their little boy were visiting from Washington. So we all gathered at my parents' house. Me and my husband and my little girl came, and My parents took the opportunity to sit us down and let us know that they went ahead and they bought cemetery plots for themselves. They had bought two plots, but they decided that they wanted to be cremated. And in that case, they would be buried in one plot together because they wanted to be together. And so they said because they now own two plots, one would be left over, which could go to either my sister because she was single or my little brother because he was single, where I would be buried with my husband and so on. But we could do whatever we want with it. If we didn't want it, we could sell it, or I didn't know how that all worked, but that was their thinking. And they wanted to know if we were all okay with them being cremated. And we were all okay with it. I do remember us discussing cremation in general, my sister and I saying, that's something that I would want for myself as well. I'm all for cremation. That sounds great. So we all knew how she felt. It ended up being pretty important later on. In that visit in September, she was telling me, her words were, she was trying to break up with Ray. I was a little surprised because they'd been together so long. She was trying to be easy on him because he had developed a relationship with Donnie and she didn't want to rip that relationship apart. So she was truly trying to ease him out of it. They were at a point where they had agreed to go out with other people and just see each other whenever, but he would pick Donnie up from preschool or drop him off. So he was active in Donnie's life. And so she didn't want to ruin that relationship and take another person away from Donnie. I believe it was around October, so a few weeks after this family visit, we had one of our cousins from Ohio. His name is Rob, and he came to California. My parents told him he could stay at their house, and he was my age. He was 21. His goal was to get work and build a life in California. Not too long after he came, two of his friends also came out. They lived at my parents' for a very short period of time, but then they got their own place. Rob stayed with my parents because they had an extra room. They weren't in any rush to make him move out because Rhonda had already had her own place for quite a long time. Her and Rob got really friendly. They did a lot of things together. I guess they had a lot in common. She loved to dance and he loved to dance. And he hung out at her place a lot. His friends would come over. One night they were intimate. Maybe it was a week before the murder. This happened between her and Rob one time and it was over. But Ray was very jealous of these guys coming over to her house. He didn't like it. But we don't know if Ray found out about it and that's where he lashed out at her or if it was something else, because of course we'll never know. November of 78. My husband and I, we were going to Simi for the weekend. One of my friends was getting married. Rhonda was now going to school at the local cosmetology school. She wanted to be a hairdresser. So she was going to do my hair for the wedding, which was that Saturday. The Friday night before, my husband worked swing shift at Lockheed in Burbank, and so did my cousin Rob. I was going to drop him off. And then I was going to drive on to see me. And then he would come home with my cousin that night after they got off their shift. He told me they would probably go to a bar or something afterwards, which I was fine with. So I didn't expect him home right away. I dropped him off, went on to see me. By the time I got there, it was probably around 5 o'clock or so. So I had a little bit of time to sit and visit. At that time, Rhonda told me again that she was still trying to break up with him. Never said anything about what happened with her and Rob. We were in the house with family, my mother and my father, so she wasn't going to say anything. But she did say that Ray was seeing a psychiatrist. I was really surprised. I said, I didn't know he was taking it so hard. I realized that it was a little bit more serious than I thought it was. Her and Donnie went on home that evening, and my husband came to my parents. Him and Rob came around 2:30 or something. they had actually gotten lost because neither one of them are from that area. And they tried taking side roads. So they ended up coming home pretty late. They had stopped to park and drink a few beers, and that was pretty much it. He came home and we talked for a little bit, and then we went back to sleep. I got up in the morning. My sister was going to come and pick me up and take me to her school. She was going to do my hair there. The wedding wasn't until later on in the evening. We waited and she never showed. So we started calling her and there was no answer. So we thought maybe she's on her way. So we didn't think much about it. But when it came close to 10 o'clock, it was getting a little weird. From her place to my parents was probably about a 10-minute drive. So by closer to 10, we were getting concerned. And my mom and I decided we should go and see what's wrong. So we got my little girl. We were all going to go. Well, then my husband got out of bed and we told him what was going on. And he said, I'll take you. We can go. And so my mom said, fine. So we left our little girl with her and him and I drove in our truck over to Rhonda's apartment. As we're driving, I'm getting this feeling of dread. I remember exactly where we were, what intersection we were at when it just hit me hard. And I just thought, what if he's gone crazy and killed her? It was the weirdest thought. I put it out of my head as quick as I could because it was just too weird for me to even think about. We got down to her street, made a turn into her street. She lived in an apartment and parking was outside on the curb. And she was upstairs and there was an open stairwell. So you could see everything from the ground. You could see the door and the windows. I saw her car there. And then I really honestly got very scared because nothing made sense. And so we went up and we knocked on her door. There was no answer. We tried the doorknob and it was locked. Then a neighbor came over and asked us if we had heard from Rhonda. And I told her, no, that's what we're here for. She said, we heard Ray over about 5:30 in the morning, and it sounded like he was hitting her. She also saw his truck outside parked in front of the apartment that morning. She looked out her window and she heard the commotion. We couldn't open the door, and by this time it's 10:30. So that's 5 hours after they heard the commotion. I asked her if she had a phone that I could call my mom. And she said, no, we don't have a phone, but you can go downstairs into the laundry room and use the payphone. So I did, called my mom and said, something's wrong. I told her what the neighbor said. And so she said, we're on our way. So I went back upstairs. And as I'm walking up the stairs, I looked through and I could see my husband trying to pry the window open. And the window was fairly low on the landing. It wasn't a high window to climb up in. He just lifted it up and pulled it out of the track and set the window down. So I climbed in behind him as I'm looking at this apartment. Of course, it's raining that day. It's dark. It's gloomy. All the curtains are closed. So it was very dim in her apartment and just creepy. It was a very small apartment. We had to walk around the dining room table. The kitchen's there. To the left is the front door and the dining room, and then the hallway is down at the end. And that's where her bedroom and Donnie's bedroom were. I just looked and I could see drawers pulled open. It looked to me like things were just pulled out of her end table and thrown on the floor. I saw no rhyme or reason to this mess in her living room. I remember seeing some of Donnie's toys. I couldn't even tell you what was on the floor, but there was lots of things on the floor. It looked staged. That's the first thing I thought of. I was there. I mean, we're talking seconds. Then my husband came back into view and he wouldn't look at me. He just says, don't go in there. And I said, what happened? He just said, she's dead. So we turned around and went back out the window. And at some point, I can never remember if I said it while I was still in the apartment with him or we were outside the window, but I said, what about Donnie? And he said, I don't know. I didn't see him. And I said, you got to go check. At that moment, I'm thinking Ray has probably taken Donnie with him. It's been 5 hours. Who knows where he is? When my husband came back out, he wouldn't look at me. And he finally just said, he's the same way. Donnie was only 4 years old. I pretty much lost it after that. The rest of the day is a complete blur. I barely remember my parents arriving. I remember my little brother arriving. I don't remember the police. I've seen pictures that the newspaper took that I didn't even remember seeing a photographer there. I remember nothing about that. But I do know we were there for a while. I know the police asked me who could have done this, and I told them it had to be Ray.
Thank you to Lola Blankets for sponsoring this episode. The moment I received my Lola blanket and I felt the incredible material that each blanket is made of, I knew I was in love. And I also knew I found my new favorite gift for every single occasion. There are no blankets on this planet like Lola blankets, and I've made it no secret that I absolutely love them. In fact, I've made it a point to share with anyone and everyone and to gift them to as many people as humanly possible. That's because Lola is the world's number one blanket, crafted with ultra-soft luxury faux fur and a signature four-way stretch that sets it apart. It's machine washable, double hemmed for durability, and stays flawless. No pilling, no shedding, even after repeated washes. My son has grown incredibly attached to our Lola blanket, and I've had to wash it a lot to keep it smelling fresh. No amount of washes have affected its softness. There's a reason it's called the world's number one blanket. This thing is seriously next level. And Lola blankets come in a range of sizes. I have the large, and it's perfect for cozying up solo or with someone else. The extra large is massive. They call it the biggest blanket on the internet. Lola also makes weighted blankets for calming, therapeutic vibes. And don't miss the matching pillows. They look amazing and you save when you're bundling. For a limited time, our listeners can get 40% off select Lola Blankets products with code WCN at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use code WCN to get 40% off your order. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and let them know that What Came Next sent you. Wrap yourself in luxury with Lola Blankets.
He was arrested that afternoon. I was interviewed by the detectives because I was considered a witness. They took me in a room and they showed me a picture of a t-shirt. They asked me if I recognized the t-shirt. I recognized it as Donnie's t-shirt. But I remember saying to them, because there was a small piece cut out of the shirt, I said, but it didn't have a hole in it. I don't remember being interviewed much. The day of the murder, the local newspaper came and interviewed my mother. And it was raining, and she stood out in the garage. They had the garage door open, and they just stood under the cover of the garage door and interviewed. And it's November. It's a little chilly. Looking back and reading that interview, I don't know how she did it. She said, I feel like I lost three children today. That's what she told the newspaper, because she cared for Ray so much. I just can't even imagine. But she was very strong. We had gone to the wedding that evening. I wasn't going to go to the wedding, but my mother said, just go and get out of the house. Get your mind off of things. We ended up taking my cousin Rob with us so we could all just get out. When we got home, my mom said that Rob and Mario needed to go to the police department and be interviewed. This was late at night, and they did. They drove to get interviewed. We stayed at my parents' for quite a while. A lot of family came out. My mom's sisters came out from Ohio, and my brother, of course, from Washington. So we had a lot of people in that tiny little house. And I remember bits and pieces about the visits. I will tell you one thing that stands out, the kindness of people. To me, they were strangers, but my parents were involved in a baseball club. My parents got involved when my little brother was about seven, and he went on to play baseball in high school. And my dad was still involved with the ball club. He volunteered doing the snack bar for 18 years until him and mom retired and moved. It was just one of the things he loved to do. And having been involved in it for so long, every single day, somebody came to the house with food. And I couldn't even tell you. I know we ate because I had a family to feed. I had to make sure my husband and my daughter were fed. But I remember every day some person showing up with food and dropping it off. They got together and organized meals and made sure that we were fed. I never forgot that. I thought that was the most unbelievably kindest thing I had ever heard, and it stuck with me. Within a few months, we were doing a preliminary hearing. I honestly don't remember what little bit I learned. In the meantime, I don't even think I knew what the evidence against him was. I only learned what I read in the paper, and my mother saved every newspaper article. Looking back, that's really all I had to go by. When Rhonda died, she was strangled and she was raped after she was dead or dying. So she died exactly the way our grandmother died, and that was her biggest fear. Rhonda was raped after she was dead. There were abrasions within Rhonda's vagina consistent with penetration, but no semen. Looking back, I just don't think I wanted to know details, but I knew enough. I knew how she died. I knew how Donnie died. Donnie had been suffocated, and they believed that that t-shirt that I was shown by the officers to identify, it was held over his face. There was nothing missing. The only thing missing was a necklace. It was an opal with a diamond. Opal was her birthstone, but also Donnie's, because Donnie was born the day before her birthday. So they shared a birthday almost. Ray actually gave her this necklace for her 24th birthday. I know he was pretty proud of it because he mentions that necklace a few times. Rhonda only had this necklace for a couple of weeks, and she had told my mom that her necklace went missing. So it didn't go missing the day of the murder. She said she had left it sitting on her coffee table, and Ray had come over for something. When she went to go get the necklace a little while later, it was gone. And she always wondered, did Ray take the necklace? She never found it. That was the only thing that was technically missing from her apartment. And this was brought up in the newspapers. The preliminary hearing was pretty basic. It was very hard. I had to get on the stand. My mother had been on the stand before me and cried. So when she started crying, I started crying. So now I'm on the stand and I can't stop crying. The murder trial started around February of 1979 and lasted until April of 79. For 11 years, I worked in the courts in Las Vegas, and I worked for a judge with all the holdups and all the delays. It took sometimes years to get a trial. And I looked back at ours and I thought, how did they do it that quick? But they had over 300 pieces of evidence. So they had a lot of evidence. I was excluded. My husband was excluded. My mother was excluded. We didn't get to be present for each other's testimony because we were witnesses. This jury was out to deliberate 2 weeks. They came back with a hung jury, and it was 10 to 2 for conviction. So we had to wait for a retrial. You can't move forward. Your life is in limbo. And I wasn't even submerged in it. I was still living in LA. I didn't sit on the phone every day with my mother. So we were pretty far removed distance-wise. So when I got information, it was far and few in between. I mean, I just didn't really get a lot of communication. For me, it was hard, but I can't even imagine what my parents were going through. That had to be horrible for them. I don't know how my mother held it together, because something that should have torn our family apart actually brought us closer together. I credit my mother with that because of her faith and her forgiveness. After that, they had to set a new trial date, of course. That started in November of that year, 79, so just a few months later, and it lasted until January of 1980. So it was another decently long trial. In between, they had given us our transcripts from the first trial so we could refresh our memory, and reading it, none of it rang a bell. It was just weird. So we had to go back in again and testify again. I'm not even sure how long the jury was out for. I think the jury went out sometime in December. And of course, you got the holidays in there, January of 1980. They came back with a conviction. He got sentenced for double murder. And then they also had the special circumstances, which was the rape. And again, I still didn't know every detail. I think my mother told me some things, but I didn't ask a lot of questions. So that trial ended up with conviction. He was sentenced in February to life without parole. Even though we don't have that evidence anymore, it was destroyed back in the 80s. They had it all. It was enough to convince the jury. I never had any doubt. We were, I guess, relieved we could actually move forward. Life seemed to finally be able to go on. My parents had other grandchildren coming along. That was their whole world. Their grandchildren were everything to them. My brother and his wife ended up moving back to see me, so they had them close by. Things got better, things healed. We never forgot them.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
It was pretty quiet for many, many years. It was a closed case. I retired in May of 2017, and I moved back to Chico, California. So I had been here about a month when I get a phone call from a homicide detective with the Simi Police Department. And he told me that he was looking into Ron and Donnie's murder again. He made it very clear when he walked through the door that he felt that Ray was not guilty, that he felt that it was actually two people that were involved in the murder, which kind of floored me.
Thank you again to Quince and Lola Blankets for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to elevate your summer wardrobe by going to quince.com/WCN for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/WCN for free shipping and 365-day returns. And for a limited time, our listeners can get 40% off select Lola Blankets products with code WCN at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use code WCN to get 40% off your order. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and don't forget to let them know that What Came Next sent you. What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.